From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Tonight, we are coming to you live from the cavernous Fleet Center at the edge of Boston Harbor, site of this year's Democratic National Convention. We are here for the first of four nights with a fully pre-scripted finale. On Thursday, Senator John Kerry will be formally nominated as the Democrats' challenger for the White House. But it is not a week without mysteries. Most of all, can John Kerry ignite the national support he needs to defeat George Bush? On the roster tonight, Al Gore, Jimmy Carter, Hillary Rodham Clinton, and Bill Clinton. And as we open our phone lines, you. This hour, On Point, raising the curtain on the Democratic National Convention and the 2004 race for the White House. Just to catch the mood of the convention hall on day one, a few highlights from speeches earlier today.
Once again, the Democratic Party shows it is a party of inclusion and progress.
John Kerry and I are working in the Senate to end the census ban and buying lower-cost prescription drugs from Canada. And President Kerry will allow our government to negotiate the lowest possible prices from domestic drug companies.
Our platform describes how we can improve U.S. intelligence, cutting off funding for terrorists, and prevent nations from providing a training ground for terrorist operations. Further, we commit to direct and immediate military action to capture or destroy terrorist groups and their leaders.
We know that President Bush refuses to respect workers' freedom to organize into unions and support the Employees' Free Choice Act, but John Kerry supports it 100%. Everywhere from Maine to Honolulu, working families are working together and joining together to elect a president who is on our side.
But I have never been as worried about the management of our country's security as I am today. It is time for a change.
And there they were, Congressman Gregory Meeks of New York, Democratic National Committee Vice Chair, Linda Chavez Thompson, Michigan Senator, Debbie Stabenow, Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack, and former Secretary of Defense William Perry, all speaking earlier today in the opening hours of the Democratic National Convention in Boston. We want to get you in on the conversation tonight. What do you want to hear from John Kerry and the Democratic Party this week? What do you need to hear? If you're undecided, what could John Kerry say this week that could sway you to his camp? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. With me in the Fleet Center tonight is Jack Beatty, On Point news analyst and senior editor at The Atlantic Monthly. Jack, here we are in full sway already. Your first impressions of the Democrats gathering?
Well, you know, the media has been saying and pointing to a lot of evidence that this is an unprecedentedly united party. What strikes me is the profound division in the party between the delegates and the candidate. 95% of the delegates think the Iraq War was a mistake. 60% of the American public thinks it was a mistake. The candidate says it wasn't. Bush just did it in the wrong way.
But the delegates seem to be stuffing that under their hats, Jack. They're not waving it in John Kerry's face, at least not yet.
No, they're not. They're stuffing it under. But the question, it isn't just a, it's sort of a moral question in a way, because, of course, the issue comes to, you know, when should the troops come home? And 41% of the delegates want them home within either now or within the next 18 months. Only 5% want them there for the next 2 to 5 years. Well, suppose John Kerry were to say, I'm with the 41%, Americans who will die then will live. So a lot does depend on this. And you know, when a party suppresses its best punch against the opposition, it gets into an election where Mr. Bush can very well stand up and say, listen, I made mistakes, but I'm not trying to have it all ways. You're trying to have it all ways, John Kerry. I've got political courage. You just are a trimmer.
But clearly, Jack, John Kerry, as this convention gets started, and it is bustling into full gear as we sit here right now, delegates flowing by us into the convention hall where later tonight Al Gore and Bill Clinton and Jimmy Carter will speak. Clearly, John Kerry has calculated that he's right to parse on this. He's right to say, yes, I gave the green light, but no, they didn't do it the right way.
Yeah, but I know he is. I know that's his calculation. And the election is a kind of hypothesis. Is that right? or could he throw a better punch than that at George Bush and say, look, you fooled me, it was a mistake, and now we're going to talk about that, rather than it was our mistake, which is pretty much what he's saying.
But clearly the yearning for a win is tremendous here this week. Jack, you can feel it all around this heavily guarded city. Delegates are talking win, we must win, and appear to be willing to do whatever's necessary to make that happen.
Yes, and you mentioned the heavily guarded city. What strikes me is how that, you know, really in a strange way, how the terrorists have won. Our political liberty is less than it was 4 years ago.
Our political liberty meaning what? I mean, I've seen the helicopters in the sky, the armed soldiers in the streets, but you're talking about something else.
Meaning that the dissenters here, the people who are pro-life, people who are talking about Israel-Palestine, people who are talking about the Iraq War, are confined to a cage some distance away where they can't be heard by the delegates, where they can't be seen by the delegates, and it's a parody, a farce of free speech, and it just shows what this war on terror has already done to us. They're surrounded by nets and wires. And, you know, we have already lost a significant degree of the freedom of speech that we had just yesterday.
Jack, I want to turn to WBUR reporter Audie Cornish. We are sitting here tonight on the lip of the Great Hall where all the proceedings will take place. Audie is on the floor of that hall and joins us now. Audie, can you hear me out there? Audie Cornish, are you there? We seem to have lost the link to Audie just now. We'll come back to her. Jack, we are joined tonight, and happy to be so, by John Harwood, national political reporter for The Wall Street Journal. He has covered the last 5 presidential elections and has been very good in sharing his time with us over this election season. John Harwood, good to have you sitting with us here on the edge of everything going on at the convention in Boston. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Tom, it's great to be here and finally meet you face-to-face.
Yes, it's terrific to have you. So, you come into this week, like all the reporters watching this, with what at the top of your list for what you're looking for to come out of this convention? What are the markers that you've set out? What are you looking for, John?
What I'm looking for is what kind of an introduction that John Kerry gets with a pretty specific group of voters, maybe 10% of the electorate, maybe even somewhat less, people who pay little attention to politics, who haven't been following this like all of us have over the last several months, who know next to nothing about John Kerry, and they're going to draw some conclusions from seeing him in the flesh on Thursday night. That's the most important night of the convention. Mm-hmm. But also from the way the rest of the convention is covered in their local press, on television, and in the newspaper. They're going to draw some conclusions about, A, is this a party that has its act together, and B, is this a nominee who's got a plan for the future, looking at the economy, and can protect us at a dangerous time after 9/11. Let me say, Tom, I disagree with Jack in a couple of ways. First of all, I think there is more unity within this party than Jack does, and I think of it in the following way. I believe that most of the delegates, like John Kerry, believe in their gut that if John Kerry or Al Gore had been president, this war would not have happened. Okay, I think they're agreed on that. John Kerry has made a tactical decision to play it a certain way. He has cast his vote as one to give the president authority if he didn't mess it up. But I think on the point of whether this war would have taken place, I think they agree on that.
And so they take comfort from that. They can swallow their anger about the war because they're thinking, well, if Kerry or Gore had been there, it wouldn't have happened. So we're going to stick with them now, whatever their position at the moment is.
I think that's more important than how would John Kerry play the cards that George Bush handed him?
Yes.
And, you know, above all, don't forget, voters make their decisions when they look to the future. They don't know what circumstances are going to confront the next president, but they want somebody who shares their instincts and their values, and these delegates know that John Kerry shares their instincts and values.
How do you think he can make the case, though, not to the faithful gathered here in this hall and swarming around us right now, but to that undecided 10% that are going to decide this election? What's the note that John Kerry and the convention need to hit to pull them in? What are the odds of them hitting that note?
I had an interview with John Kerry about a week ago. I asked him that very question. What's the takeaway message for those undecided voters? And the answer was, I want them to know I'm a strong leader. You're going to hear the word strength over and over and over again. They're going to talk about his biography as a decorated Vietnam veteran. They're going to talk about his experience on foreign policy in the United States Senate. And because he has both those things, John Kerry is better positioned to contest the national security issue with a president who's got some problems on that front than any Democrat's been in a long time.
John, lay down a baseline for us tonight as this convention gets rolling throughout the week. We're going to
going to be following the speeches on the floor, but we're really looking at the whole Democratic effort here and the whole race for the White House. Where does that race stand as we sit here tonight, as the Democrats flow into the big hall? How does it look, the horse race, Bush-Kerry?
The horse race is fairly even, or perhaps Kerry is slightly ahead, but actually he's in a stronger position than that suggests, because there's a block of undecided voters, those casual voters I talked about before, who, when if you really look inside the poll numbers, our Wall Street Journal NBC poll recently, those swing voters tend to have a negative impression of George W. Bush and a positive impression of John Kerry, but they don't know very much about it. They want to be reassured that this is an acceptable alternative to George Bush. And if he can do that, both on Thursday night and in the rest of the messages that get communicated here, he's got a significant upside with those undecided voters, and that's where his bounce is going to come from.
Now, if I've got it right, though, Ronald Reagan, when he faced Jimmy Carter, at this point in the election cycle, was further ahead of Carter than Kerry is of Bush now.
No, he wasn't, actually. It was about the same. Going into the Republican convention in Detroit in 1980, Ronald Reagan was 3 points ahead in the Gallup poll of Jimmy Carter. This John Kerry is the first challenger to an incumbent president since Reagan to be even or ahead. So they're in comparable positions. And Ronald Reagan, he then fell behind after Jimmy Carter's convention in August in New York. But then we got right to the end of the campaign. We had the debates, and that's going to be the next critical moment of this campaign. And then it broke open for Ronald Reagan right at the end.
So what's going to be the measure of Kerry's success or wash or failure this week? How big a bump does he need in the polls? Is that the proper measure for assessing how he does this week, John?
It's hard to know. Both sides are spinning different historical models that tell you what his bounce ought to be or might be expected to be. And the Kerry campaign will say, well, because the country is so polarized, we shouldn't get any bounce. I think that's not right. I think John Kerry needs to be ahead at the end of this convention. It is realistic to think that he could be 5, 6, 7, 8 points ahead. And if he can do that, he's going to be in a significantly strengthened position for that fall campaign. George Bush will get a smaller bounce because he's much better known. John Kerry is the one with the upside near term.
And you've talked with John Kerry one-on-one recently. We know how George Bush conveys strength. Mm-hmm. He stands chest out at the microphone, and he goes to war. If John Kerry needs to communicate strength, what's in his quiver? How does he do it?
There are several ways in which his campaign will try to do it. One of them, let's start with the less serious stuff first. John Kerry is an athlete, so we've seen him hunting.
We saw him throw out the first pitch at the Red Sox game last night.
That was a little bit
in the dirt, I'm afraid to say.
Yeah, he didn't have a lot of heat on that ball.
No.
But fortunately, the Red Sox won.
Forced through a strike.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He got booed. But that was a good event for John Kerry. He's an athlete. He'll show that.
Yeah.
The war record, you just can't overestimate.
The medals are right there.
The medals are there.
Bronze,
the Navy buddies
hearts.
Are there.
Yeah.
And those people are going to be addressing the convention. That's big.
So, Jack, here he is, war hero, and we're going to hear about that over and over and over again during this convention. Wherever the party stands at large, do you think Kerry can ring that strength bell? Strength at home, respect in the world. We're hearing it over and over already. Can he stand up and look like that strong leader that John Harwood's saying the swing voters require of the Democratic Party this year?
Well, it's going to be the business of the Republicans to say he can and to show he can. And they're going to try to juxtapose the Kerry who voted for the war and then voted against the appropriation. And they're going to juxtapose the Kerry who voted against Gulf War I with the Kerry who voted for Gulf War II. And they're going to say, they're going to intimate he did this sheerly for political reasons. And they're going to say, which is true, that he voted against the $87 billion for political reasons to get in good with the Democratic prime. So this figure of strength is going to look like a politician.
Well, this is why...
John, I would hold the thought. We've got to take a short break. We're at the Democratic National Convention on its opening night in Boston right now, sitting on the lip of the hall as delegates flow in. We'll hear tonight from Al Gore, Bill Clinton, Hillary Rodham Clinton, Jimmy Carter, and more. We are raising the curtain on the Democratic National Convention. Live from the hall, you can join the conversation. What do you need to hear from the Democrats from John Kerry this week? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook, live at the Democratic National Convention. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are live this week from the Democratic National Convention in Boston, just on the lip of the hall tonight as delegates flow in for all the speeches that will take place tonight. Jimmy Carter, Al Gore coming up in the next hour, Hillary Rodham Clinton, and Bill Clinton later tonight. You can join our conversation tonight. What do you need to hear from the Democrats, from John Kerry this week? Party faithful, how do you see Kerry's challenge? Undecided voters, what would sway your vote? What would turn you off? And Republicans, are you worried tonight or at ease with your man, George Bush, as the Democrats sit down for their powwow in Boston? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. The Democratic National Convention, like all conventions, draws all the party bigwigs, current and future Democratic stars. Moments ago, we spoke with one of them, New York Attorney General Eliot Spitzer. I asked him what he thinks John Kerry needs to accomplish at the convention this week.
I think John Kerry will articulate an affirmative vision to the country. I think until now there's been an enormous reservoir of discontent with the Bush administration, and the polls show that that alone has gotten us to a point where John Kerry is ahead. But I think when you are asking the public to elect a president of the United States, you also must have and should have an affirmative vision. John Kerry will articulate that, lay it out. It will be textured. It will have some specifics as well as broader themes, and it will say not only do we disagree with what President Bush has done, but here's the affirmative agenda.
Does John Kerry have to set the House afire to win this election?
No, I think everybody looks for that moment of inspirational oratory, and I'm sure we will have it over the course of this convention, but we are electing somebody based upon judgment, intellect, capacity to understand the problems and hence the solutions, not whether somebody can deliver the best speech. There are great orators who would have been terrible presidents and great presidents who have been terrible orators. So that alone is not the measure of the candidate.
And as we sit here with just a couple of months and change to go before the election, how do you think the Democrats are placed? How's John Kerry placed? How tough a race is this going to be for him?
We are certainly much better placed than anybody thought we would be 4 months ago, 8 months ago, or a year ago. As in so many things, this race has converged. The momentary bump that the president got after Iraq, the invasion, has clearly dissipated, and there's substantial discontent about his handling of that war. And as a consequence, I think John Kerry is poised to really capitalize on an opportunity to take the nation in a different direction.
But how tight, how tough a race ahead?
Everybody thinks it will be tough. We are poised to and ready to fight for every vote, every state. And as a consequence, you sense a steely determination here among the delegates to put their shoulders to the grindstone, our shoulders to the grindstone, to not take anything for granted in any state, to work vigilantly in the states where we think we can win, because we believe deeply that the course that this nation takes will hinge upon the outcome of the election, and we are hoping we can do better than we have been.
Eliot Spitzer, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
New York Attorney General Eliot Spitzer talking with us just a few minutes ago. WBUR reporter Audie Cornish has been on the floor in the convention hall, watching the delegates flow in, talking with them. Audie, thanks for being with us. What's the mood down there?
Well, the mood is definitely one of excitement. They are excited by the lineup tonight with Clinton, with Carter. Just the idea that the people who are out there are people that are really there to motivate the base. They say, this one's for us tonight. In a poll by the Boston Globe about who were the best admired living Democrats, Bill Clinton came out on top, beating out John Kerry, and Kerry beat Hillary Clinton by just 1 point. So to the delegates out there, they say that they're looking for the Democratic Party here to not just capitalize on anti-Bush sentiment, but to take that energy, focus, and really bring it somewhere and give them something to go on and to take back to the rest of the country.
Audie, we don't want to ignore the physical setting here tonight. Give us a sense of the incredible security envelope that surrounds this convention hall, that permeates this city as the Democrats sit down to do their business.
Well, it's Boston's first political convention. It's the first political convention since the September 11th attacks, and basically Bostoners responded by putting a cage around the Fleet Center. The sports arena is near the harbor and near downtown, and the security precautions are extremely tight. Today, activists who made their first forays into the free speech zone immediately started fighting back and saying that they weren't going to go into it.
So this is the sort of caged zone,
effectively. Yeah, it's a special zone across the street from the Fleet Center.
Right.
And the idea is,
netting,
look, we're giving you a
fence.
Podium. It's going to be great. Mm-hmm. And people saw barbed wire and low construction beams and said, we're not going in there.
Now,
so
we've seen the helicopters, armed soldiers or National Guard, I'm not sure which, around some of the subway entrances and elsewhere. A very heavy presence. Reports today of snipers on the roof of the State House here in Boston.
Yeah, we're not used to seeing this many public safety officials on every street corner. Everywhere you go, there's a huddle of National Guard, of police officers from other states, from state police, searches, a lot of federal presence here. So it's definitely Boston went all out to ensure that this is going to be a safe opening night and a safe convention.
But inside the hall, kind of an odd juxtaposition, but it feels quite normal, actually, once you're through all that.
Well, it's quite an interesting layout. They had talked about how they were going to sort of go all out to make this new and inventive and innovative design. But what you do have is a stage that is so open, and there are faces. Everywhere you look down there, you're seeing the faces of the party. And obviously there's being a great emphasis placed on minority and inclusion and sort of the diversity of the party, and that's on display everywhere. The way the setup now is, when you see this at home on television, you're going to see a sea of faces behind the candidate and at any and every possible camera angle.
Artie Cornish, great to have your report from the floor. Thanks so much for being with us tonight. We look forward to your reports throughout this week.
Okay, thank you.
WBUR reporter Artie Cornish. I've been joined tonight by John Harwood, national political reporter for the Wall Street Journal, and now by Walter Shapiro, political columnist for USA Today, author of One Car Caravan. He's been a frequent guest on Point. We're delighted to have you with us tonight, Walter.
It's a delight to be here, even though, in fact, coming up here for the first time in Boston, I've gotten caught up in the interminable silliness of a political convention.
Now what do you mean exactly?
I mean, where else in America can you witness the introduction of Ted Sorensen, Jack Kennedy's legendary speechwriter,
yes,
to Michael Moore, the polemicist.
Old, new, sober, and wild.
And, of course, their linkages, I think they have the same literary agent.
You know, Michael Moore is on the premises, or was earlier today. We saw him with an incredible entourage of cameras all around him. But, of course, the real cameras will be trained on the podium tonight and every night. Well, I don't know what the real cameras, but even you think it's Moore.
We have Michael Moore, for better or for worse, and for my mind worse, has now reached a critical mass of celebrity that, shall we say, probably at this point within the Democratic Party, transcends either Jimmy Carter or Al Gore, the next two speakers.
Well, there you go, and it may be true. Walter, give us the marker you're laying down. We spoke with John Harwood earlier. What are you looking for? What's the bar that the Democrats, that John Kerry, need to clear this week?
It is not that high a bar, in the sense that all the cliches about Kerry has to close the deal. It would be nice if we left the convention and a typical voter would say, I'm for John Kerry for president because he will do X about Iraq, unlike Bush. So far, the most crystalline statement of Kerry's Iraqi position was about a 900-word op-ed in the Washington Post. So if he can achieve that, since this is National Security Week for the Democrats, it would be terrific. But ultimately, I think it is less that Kerry has to accomplish something and more that he has to avoid doing something. And that is falling into the Al Gore trap of terminal phoniness, where every gesture on Thursday night when he speaks to the convention looks like it has been contrived in front of a mirror, with Bob Schrum whispering in one ear and Tad Devine whispering in the other ear.
These his top advisors and speechwriters.
Yes.
But does he have it in him? If Kerry presents as John Kerry, the genuine article, is that going to flip the trigger here?
Well, I'm not sure that you need that much to flip the trigger. That there is, we have a little-known challenger who in both the polls of the key states like Iowa, like Missouri and Ohio, is running even with Bush. And I think more and more, as long as Kerry does a credible performance, I think this becomes more and more of an election that's a referendum on Bush rather than turning into a referendum on how touchy-feely and lovable is John Kerry.
Walter Shapiro, John Harwood, we're blessed with a surplus of riches tonight. We're joined right now by Eleanor Clift, contributing editor at Newsweek magazine. Eleanor, wonderful to have you with us.
Glad to be here.
Here we are on the rim of the convention hall. You can hear the din behind us, and it will only grow throughout the night and throughout the week. John Kerry has said, Eleanor Clift, that he doesn't want this to be a Bush-bashing week. And yet there's a lot of anger out there, and the Democratic Party, John Kerry included, has ridden on that anger. Do you think he's right to call for a positive week? Is that going to work for him?
Oh, I think that there's plenty of anger out there. You're right. And I think a lot of the country has decided they would like to fire George Bush. But the second half of that decision is a decision to hire John Kerry. And I think it's not enough not to be Bush, that he's got to give the voters a reason to vote for him. And I think what this country is really yearning for is some sense of hope and optimism. The last couple of months have been a real downer. I think this is an opportunity for John Kerry to enter the public consciousness, if you will, to say something memorable, one line about something. I'm not saying he has to take a different position on Iraq. I think he's committed to see the Iraq venture through.
Right. Not going to walk away from that.
No. But he has not yet made an impression on the American people. I heard some cartoonists joking that Kerry looks like he belongs on Mount Rushmore. The problem is he says about as much as those other fellows.
And you've got to be president to get there.
That's right.
John Harwood, what about this issue of anger versus the positive? Do you think they're right to steer away from anger this week? Do you think they'll, in fact, actually resist it, including Al Gore tonight when he gets up for the first time before the full national public since his, since his loss of the White House?
Tom, Eleanor is exactly right, and I believe they will resist it. And if you want to see the evidence that they're going to do that, look at Al Gore's speech, which, of course, we can't quote from directly because it's embargoed until he delivers it.
Right.
But you read through that speech, and you'll see that there are two words that are not mentioned in that speech. And remember, Al Gore is somebody who's been ripping George Bush up one side and down the other for the last several months. The words George Bush do not appear in the speech.
That is incredible restraint from he who faced George Bush in the year 2000. I want to turn to our callers. Don is calling from Greensboro, North Carolina. Hi, Don. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you doing?
Just great.
What I would really like to hear John Kerry say is that he is going to hold those accountable in the current administration for the lies and corruption and wholesale destruction of the Bill of Rights that this country has seen in the last 4 years.
Lies, corruption, and destruction. So you're riding the anger beam, and you want to hear that from the podium in Boston, Don.
I don't expect to, but I would like to.
And I take it that you're an anybody but Bush voter from the sound of your comment.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm a registered
independent.
You're already on the bandwagon. Walter Shapiro, you can hear it right there, that kind of hard edge in Don's voice. He wants the anger up there. He wants accountability, and he wants the Democrats, he wants Kerry to lay it out.
Well, I, too, want the anger, not because I think it's going to sway the swing voters in Ohio, but because I really hate the transparency of a party that knows it's very angry at Bush. Putting the muzzle on all of the speakers. One of the more interesting speakers I'm looking forward to tonight is Jimmy Carter.
Yes.
Who is very angry at Bush, almost at Al Gore level.
And speaks with that kind of moral rectitude that can get really wound up.
But also has the stature, I'm told he did, to tell the Kerry minders and the Kerry meddlers, the people who denatured the Gore speech, that no, thank you. I'm speaking and I'm saying what I want to say. It's not that Jimmy Carter is going to go off the charts in invective, but I think it's going to be very interesting to watch the tenor of the Carter speech in contrast to the very obedient Al Gore speech, where someone close to Gore told me, Gore didn't like it, but he's resolved to be a totally good trooper.
And Eleanor, off of Don's call, can this convention really get to the heart of the differences between the parties and the sort of bill of complaint that's out there without the anger? If it's all positive, do they touch the strongest nerve, the strongest energy cable here?
Well, to view it through the Carter prism, if memory serves me right, past conventions, Carter has not been given primetime speaking slot. I remember one convention he chose to go to Wyoming and visit with Jane Fonda and Ted Turner at their ranch rather than attend the convention. So I think the fact that he's speaking shows how united this party is, that there are no factions anymore. And in terms of the anger, I think the anger is a given. I don't think that needs to be showcased. It's the optimistic vision, some sense that Kerry knows how to lead the country, would lead the country. On Iraq, I'll be interested to see if he's able to crystallize a position that is different from Bush's and that, again, is memorable. I'm not sure he can do that. I think this may be more about domestic issues. But this week is a chance for the Democrats to take back the flag, take back the military. He's going to see lots of generals around.
Right.
And take back God. There's going to be plenty of reverends and probably spiritual, religious references. And some people say we're going to feel like we're at a Republican convention. They're pitching to the center of the country and that elusive band of swing voters who are likely going to decide this election. The angry Democrats are going to vote for Kerry even if he comes out and, not if he praises Bush, but almost Kerry can do anything. Democrats will forgive him.
And John Harwood, how about beyond the security issue? And everyone's saying it. It's the uniform chorus. He has to convey that he's strong, that he's got the strength to pick up the terrorist threat and deal with it. Beyond that, for that swing vote, that 10% you spoke of, what's the message that works?
Well, the message that works is that he knows something to do about the U.S. economy, which is not providing jobs. We're down on net jobs from when George Bush took office. A lot of the jobs that have been added in the last few months don't have particularly good benefits. People are feeling squeezed, and he's got to make them know that he's going to do something different. That's what one of the services that Bill Clinton can do for him tonight by coming out and saying, hey, you know what? We had some policies that worked pretty well in the 1990s, and John Kerry cast one of the deciding votes in the U.S. Senate to support them. Let me just say on the previous point, I disagree with Walter. I don't think there's anything inherently the slightest bit phony about saying, we're not going to do the anger part right now. We're going to do the positive agenda for John Kerry. He has to have that. And members of this party know the anger cord has been plugged into a high voltage socket for months.
Yep.
And Democrats all across the country are really lit up by this. And that's just not the message they need to do. They need to do what they haven't done so far.
And when you see John Kerry, you've spoken with him recently. When you see him at the podium and he's himself and he's positive, does he convey the energy he needs to get the bump he needs out of this week's gathering?
He is not the most talented campaigner I've seen. He is not Clinton-esque. John Kerry, campaigning is an acquired taste for him. He doesn't deliver a speech all that well. When I saw him in West Virginia a week or so ago, he was trying to do the values rap and basically say, well, values aren't the kind of social issues that they want to talk about. Expanding health care is a value, and I share your values. He was trying to bond with these West Virginians. Not all that natural, but I do agree with Walter on this. The bar isn't that high for him.
John Harwood, great having you with us tonight. Thank you so much for joining us.
You bet.
John Harwood is national political reporter for the Wall Street Journal. Walter Shapiro, Eleanor Cliff, please stick with us. We've got to take a short break. We're talking tonight about the curtain going up on the Democratic National Convention. We are live in Boston. You can join us. Can you feel the campaign kicking off in earnest this week? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we are raising the curtain tonight on the Democratic National Convention in Boston. It is the first of four nights. John Kerry will be acclaimed the formal nominee of the Democratic Party on Thursday night. Tonight, we'll hear from Al Gore, Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter, Hillary Rodham Clinton introducing her husband. You can join the conversation as well. Do you feel the energy rising for the Democrats, or is George Bush still riding that war presidency, that security strength that he found after 9/11? What do you need to hear from the Democrats from John Kerry this week? Does Kerry need a perfect 10 to surge ahead, or is he on track already? What do you see in the Democratic Party gathering in Boston? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're happy to be joined tonight right here on the lip of the convention center by Eleanor Clift, contributing editor at Newsweek magazine, Walter Shapiro, political columnist for USA Today and author of one-car caravan on the road with the 2004 Democrats before America tunes in, and our own news analyst Jack Beattie. Jack, you see the delegates going by here. You've been talking with some of them. What's on the mind of these Democratic delegates as they sit, as they gather in Boston tonight?
Well, I'll be interested to hear what you folks say, but what I keep hearing is the word historic, that this is a historic election, that something really is on the ballot. And people, of course, immediately say the Supreme Court. But what strikes me is they don't stop with Roe v. Wade. They talk about regulatory legislation. They talk about an activist Supreme Court in the 19th century way, striking down regulation, environmental takings, this whole conservative movement that says you can't take eminent domain on issues of environment, and can't, that's an infringement of rights. They see that. They fear the appointments in the government, that just deep down in the bureaucracy you're going to get, you know, Bush people forever. And they also fear foreign policy, that this president, with nothing to hold him back, is going to do something reckless. I just keep hearing this, that this is historic, that this is more than just...
Eleanor Cliff, we do hear that most recently just from Elliot Spitzer here, but again and again, do you buy it? What is the fulcrum that the
I
that
do
the
agree with that. And,
polity
you know,
sits
four
on here.
Years ago, the 2000 election was called the Seinfeld election. It wasn't about anything. As I recall, the hottest issue was prescription drug coverage for seniors, which a lot of people couldn't really directly relate to. We've got war, we've got the economy, and the future of the court. I think if the White House remains Republican, that suggests that the Republicans might increase their majority on Capitol Hill, and you have much more of an entrenched power here. The lack of oversight, which the 9/11 Commission revealed, is partly because we've had one-party control on Capitol Hill, and Republicans don't investigate Republicans. So, yeah, I think this is a very significant election, and the public agrees. I mean, they're paying attention to this in far greater numbers than they have in the past.
Let's hear from that public again. Angie is calling from Spokane, Washington. Hi, Angie. You're on the air.
Hi.
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 What's on your mind, Angie?
Well, I'm concerned that in the drive to get those independent or on-the-fence swing voters, Kerry's forgetting the Nader supporters. And I know a lot of people who supported Nader in 2000 and are still undecided as to whether they're going to support Nader or Kerry this year. And he's not speaking to the issues they care about, like environmental issues, industrial polluters. And he's just catering to the center.
Angie, are you one of those 2000 Nader supporters?
I was, and now I'm definitely a Kerry supporter, but I have a lot of friends who are still supporting Nader, and that concerns me. I live in a swing state.
Yes, you do. Walter Shapiro, how about it? How important? Can he have it both ways? Can he speak to the center and bring in that Nader fringe, those that, unlike Angie, haven't yet conceded they're going to vote for Kerry, even if they, in their heart of hearts, would vote for Ralph?
This is always the danger of candidates who listen to the polls, who listen to the consultants, and say that I am going to micromanage this election so it comes out and I'm just going to be so precise that I don't want an emotional reaction from the voter. I just want it like you choose your tube of toothpaste. That Gleam is a little better than Crest.
Yeah.
So even though it's not an emotional commitment, I'll go with Gleam. The problem is that politics and choosing our next president should be an emotional commitment. And I keep coming back to the fact that between now and November, Kerry has got to do something more than he has done so far without being untrue to himself about clarifying where he stands on Iraq. Because Iraq right now, not the environment, not consumerism, is Ralph Nader's one issue. He is talking about, I think, pulling out of Iraq in 6 months. As the situation in Iraq becomes perceived as more and more of a morass, the real question is John Kerry coming across as Hubert Humphrey in the 1968 election?
Meaning?
A candidate whose differences with the current policy were not enough to be distinctive. And obviously the situation in 68 is radically different, but it was the first metaphor that came to mind.
But you're saying when he says, I'm going to get an international coalition together, I'm going to focus on training up the Iraqis, it's not enough to distinguish him from Bush?
It is a little bit, but Bush talks about his coalition of the willing, even though every day another nation, the Philippines, were the most latest, who says, well, we're no longer willing. He also talks about building up the Iraqi armed forces. And if you could get into that sort of micro-analysis of the situation in Iraq, people are going to switch channels and start thinking about other issues.
But on the other hand, you've said John Kerry needs to be genuine, and he seems, Eleanor Clift, to genuinely believe the U.S., now that it's there, needs to stay in Iraq and see it through, whatever that means.
Yeah, I agree with Walter to this extent. I think he has to say something memorable about Iraq. He has to also be true to himself. If you go back and look historically, I mean, Richard Nixon had a secret plan to end the war in Vietnam. I'm not advocating that, but he said something that people remember.
Eisenhower, I will go to Korea,
right. And so he needs to come up with a formulation that is significantly different from Bush's so that people see that there is a difference between the two on one of the most critical issues facing the country.
Something that hits a nerve. Chris is calling from Erie, Pennsylvania. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Yes, Tom. When a mayor or a governor greets people coming to their city to spend their money, I know that they're supposed to be nice to them and welcome them properly.
Okay.
As Governor Romney did today to the people visiting Boston. And then in the same tone, he says, well, you know, people from Massachusetts don't win the presidency as a rule.
So where are you taking us here, Chris? What's your question?
Oh, what's this with Governor Romney telling the people coming in to spend their hard-earned money into the convention, instead of just leaving it go at that, he goes the other way and says, makes a statement that, as a rule, a Massachusetts person doesn't win the presidency.
Well, okay, we'll pick it up. Jack Beatty, of course, we've got a Republican governor in Massachusetts with Republican ambitions of his own, and he's played no small role in the run-up to this convention. But then, do you expect anything different? He's in the other camp.
No, I wouldn't. And he's actually been pretty helpful on the labor front.
He helped
get the forced arbitration that finally got a deal between the mayor
and
his police and fire unions. So that was very instrumental, because it would have been very embarrassing for the mayor to have pickets everywhere. So he helped them there. But this fellow, Romney, is really, he's back where Bill Weld was when he ran against John Kerry in 1996. He's looking for the national stage. He's the future of the Republican Party, and he's auditioning too here. And he's not going to be over-gracious if he can avoid it.
And when he can get a zinger in, he'll put that zinger in. Myra is calling from Rocky Mount, North Carolina. Hi, Myra. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yes, I'm not the loyal base you were probably asking for. I'm a registered Republican.
Hey, we take him from all ends of the spectrum, Myra. Thanks for calling.
All right. My number one concern for this election is the environment. And I'm not happy where Bush has, what he has done in the last 4 years with the environment. So I'm definitely an undecided vote, and Senator Edwards is not going to sway my vote. I never voted for him for senator, and the fact that he's on the ticket is not going to sway my vote. My number one concern is the environment.
And do you have a sense, as we talk tonight, as the Democrats gather here in Boston, Myra, of where John Kerry stands? Do you have any idea whether he can be magnetic to you on that front?
I'm willing to listen to, you know, what he has to say, in not just during the convention, but, you know, going forward until election day, what he has to say on that.
Well, listen to Al Gore tonight if you can. I think he's going to praise Al Gore, no mean environmentalist himself. I think he's going to praise John Kerry on the environment. We see him talking about Kerry having the best record of protecting the environment against polluters of any of my colleagues, bar none. Myra, thanks for your call. Eleanor Clift?
Kerry actually has a very strong record on the environment. He hasn't talked about it very much in this campaign. He hasn't dwelled on it enough that it's gotten through. But he and his wife, Teresa Heinz Kerry, actually, I think, fashioned their relationship at some Earth Day conference. I mean, she is very strong on environmental issues and does a lot with her foundation. And so in terms of the environment, they're both grade A.
Walter Shapiro, you've spent a lot of time with John Kerry on this campaign trail, the one-car caravan and the rest. Talk to us about his evolution during this campaign. Has he managed to get over some hurdles? He's famous for a certain kind of stiffness, a kind of aristocratic demeanor, not always connecting. Has he made progress on that front as a campaigner?
I think he has made some progress, but I think to a large extent the mythology that was put out about at the time when Kerry won New Hampshire, won after winning Iowa and then swept to the nomination, that somehow John Kerry is this great closer and he found within him a new John Kerry. I've gone back, I've listened to some of the tapes from Iowa because I'm doing revising and updating for a paperback edition
of
my
book.
And what is clear to me is John Kerry got a little better. He got a little more disciplined about not using Senate speech. But John Kerry got the nomination largely because he was a safe harbor at a point when Howard Dean was deemed too hot, too risky for the Democratic Party. You know, he is a totally plausible candidate. But John Kerry will never be an electrifying speaker. He also, interestingly enough, for a part, and particularly in light of tonight, for a party that has come to take Bill Clinton as the gold standard as a speaker, the norm to which everyone should aspire, John Kerry, who is 3 years older than Bill Clinton, comes out of a different tradition. He is someone who oratorically is much more influenced by the Kennedy tradition and the kind of speaking you heard before television, dare I say it, dumbed down American discourse.
Classical oration.
And
big orator at Yale when he was in college.
Exactly. And I will hope, as a former presidential speechwriter myself, that John Kerry is much more true to that tradition than trying to be someone he isn't as an orator by too much of this bring it on and too much of this Bill Clinton fake folksiness would be a mistake.
Eleanor Clift, does he have to reach in and get hold of that real emotional, emotive nerve in the American voting public? Can he do it?
Well, he grew up listening to recordings of Winston Churchill's speeches, so I think his speaking style was formed early, and it's been honed by 20 years of oratory and on the Senate floor. I don't think he has to do everything tonight. I think he has to connect enough with the American people that he catches their attention. He has to demonstrate that he is strong enough to lead the country, which I think he can do, and more importantly, that he has a plan or a vision. The debates are going to be very critical coming up ahead. And Kerry's reputation as a strong closer is not so much his rhetorical ability. It's some of the decisions he makes. And it was a high-risk decision to take out a $6.4 million loan on his house.
Yes, in Boston, that's right.
To pick up camp from New Hampshire and go to Iowa. And those were decisions that really helped reverse his fortunes in the primaries.
Jack Beatty, he was a risk taker at war, a gritty warrior, and he has been gritty in the home stretch. How much riding on this week as we head into it tonight at the convention?
Well, you know, I think this business of being true to himself. I went back recently and watched him. I remember watching him on the Dick Cavett Show in 1972 when he was a grief-stricken and grieving veteran, debating a veteran who was gung-ho. That John Kerry was truly eloquent. That John Kerry moved me. That John Kerry, I went to a rally for him. Heck, I gave him money.
That was long ago.
This guy, you know, the rap on him is that politics is about positioning. It's all tactics, that his career has all been feints and moves and so on, and that he's so far distant from that person of that. And anyway, that guy would have voted against the war.
Well, there we are, a long time ago, and now here we are, John Kerry, where he's always headed, heading for the presidency, an early goal in his life. Eleanor Clift, wonderful to have you with us tonight.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here in person.
It's great to have you. And Walter Shapiro, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, it's been fun.
Walter Shapiro with USA Today, Eleanor Clift with Newsweek, and Jack Beatty. We've got a big week coming up. It's going to be fun. Glad to have you on board.
Sure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.